I'm Peter Gray. I'm a research psychologist who studies children's natural ways of learning. My research and that of others convinces me that children come into the world biologically designed to educate themselves. They don't need imposed schooling. In fact, I've become convinced that imposed schooling, as it occurs in our standard everyday schools, does much more harm than good. It undermines young people's natural ways of learning. It leads them to associate learning with stress and anxiety. It promotes shallow learning for the sake of passing tests rather than deep understanding. For this reason, I've joined with others to help form the Alliance for Self-Directed Education. You can find lots of information about self-directed education on the Alliance's website, but here are the basics. I'll begin with the term education. Unfortunately, for many people, this term has been distorted by its being linked for so long and so closely with schooling. But education is not the same as schooling. A useful definition of education is this: it's the sum of everything a person learns that enables that person to live a satisfying and meaningful life. By this definition, of course, education is a wonderful thing. It's a necessary thing. It's something we all want and need. We couldn't, after all, live a satisfying and meaningful life without it. Self-directed education, then, is education that derives from the self-chosen activities and life experiences of the person becoming educated, whether or not those activities were chosen deliberately for the purpose of education. Self-directed education can include classes or lessons if they're freely chosen by the learner, but most self-directed education does not occur that way. Most of it comes from everyday life as people pursue their own interests and learn along the way. The motivating forces include curiosity, playfulness, sociability, and the general desire of every person to do well in life. Self-directed education necessarily leads different people along different paths, though the paths may often overlap, as each person's interests and goals are in some ways unique and in some ways shared by others. Self-directed education can be contrasted to imposed schooling, which is forced upon individuals regardless of their desire for it, and is motivated by systems of reward and punishment. Imposed schooling is generally aimed at enforcing conformity rather than uniqueness, and it operates by suppressing rather than nurturing the natural drives of curiosity, playfulness, sociability, and self-direction. Research has shown repeatedly that self-directed education works beautifully if young people are provided with the conditions that optimize their natural abilities to educate themselves. These conditions can be provided at a fraction of the cost of our coercive state-controlled schools. They're already being provided by many homeschooling families who've adopted the approach commonly called unschooling, by resource centers and co-ops for self-directed learners, and by schools that have been designed explicitly to support self-directed education. Together, we can create a world where children are truly free to learn.
Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is Friday, February the 16th, and this is the concluding installment in my series with Peter Gray. Today we're going to be focusing on Peter's vision for the future of education. It is a self-directed future. Parts of this, to some of you, might sound a little far-fetched. One of the first things that you're going to hear me ask Peter to do in this conversation is talk about what he's seen that makes him believe each one of these phases could become a reality for more children and more families in the years to come. Our discussion today is actually based around a piece that he wrote for Freedom to Learn on Psychology Today. It was called Education's Future: What Will Replace K through 12 and College, folks? Because remember how that sucks too. It was actually this article. This is a short, simple article, but it was actually this piece that motivated me and producer Mike to finally reach out to Peter Gray for an interview. By the way, if you don't know, I have a producer. His name is Mike. I call him Mike the Producer. A little over a year ago, he joined Webmaster Tony at School Sucks Essential Personnel. I like everyone who's involved to have kind of a hip-hop sounding name. So, the Producer. Anyway, we're going to get right to this. I'm about to jump back on the road. By the time you hear this, I will be on the I-76 Turnpike practicing Pittsburgh ease and giggling to myself in my car. I'm currently in central Pennsylvania, not to be confused with Centralia, Pennsylvania, where an underground coal fire has burned for about four decades. I steer clear of stuff like that, I'll tell you what. And I hope you've enjoyed this series of shows. I appreciate the feedback that I've received so far. Please send me your suggestions for future guests on the topic of self-directed education, because that's what we talk about here. And I would really value your input. As the conversation here begins, we're setting up a discussion of Peter's three phases of education in the future. These are the three phases he would like to see learners go through from the time they actually start self-directed education up until they find a career. But of course, I don't need to tell you that education is a lifelong pursuit, and Peter lays out a plan here that I believe would lead to more people embracing education, embracing learning as a lifelong pursuit. That doesn't happen now, but a lot of people are working to change that. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Have a good weekend. Try to ride on waves of activity in every direction. You're the center and you're always free in every direction. I wanted you to walk through your three-phase approach. And for each one of these phases, I was hoping you could just share what you've seen that makes you hopeful each of these phases could become or is becoming a reality in the near future.
Right. Yeah, so what in this blog post, I sort of tried to outline what I see as a rational way of thinking about education in our world today. And but not only rational, but also something that I think actually could come about, and I think is maybe actually in some sense beginning to come about. And so I outlined sort of three phases to education. The phase one I call discovery, and the sort of subtitle learning about your world, yourself, and how you fit into that world. And so that's what I see as the job of childhood and at least early adolescence. You're exploring, you're playing, you're meeting a lot of people, you're doing a variety of different things that you choose to do. And you are in the process, you're figuring out who you are, what this world is like out there. And how you fit into this world. Many people throughout history have said that the number one thing is to know yourself. And so this is a period of knowing yourself. Who am I? What do I really like to do? And also knowing something about the world that I'm growing up in. And so this is the kind of thing that I think happens at schools that are designed for self-directed education, such as the Sudbury Valley School, where I've done research in the past, such as the many schools modeled after Sudbury Valley, the Agile Learning Centers, places where young people are free to play and explore in whatever ways they want in a setting where there are a lot of other people. There are kids of all ages or a number of adults. There's various things you can do. So that's the first phase. And that's kind of, it's really, really exploring widely. That would be the first phase of education. I would love to see public support, public financial support for learning centers. So that everybody could go to a center where these opportunities are available.
So again, cynicism on my part, if we look at school historically as a kind of standardizing and homogenizing force, which is pretty true from, you know, Horace Mann's implementation of the system in the United States all the way up through No Child Left Behind, right?
Right.
So, I mean, even though we have reform movements along the way, there's certainly got to be some impact from this free schools movement of the 1960s. But school, you know, has served this function, a tremendous and powerful and really calcified bureaucracy has grown up around it. So you have a real policy challenge there because, you know, so much of this self-directed education, unschooling, minimally invasive education, the assessment is going to be way more authentic and less standardized. So it seems like it would be a hard thing to encourage even policymakers or the educational bureaucracy.
You're not going to get policymakers in the educational bureaucracy to back what I'm talking about. So, you know, I'm an evolutionist, and there's two ways that evolution occurs. One is by gradual change. Mm-hmm. And so these mutations and selection, so species gradually change. The other is by extinction and replacement. And the our educational bureaucracy is incapable of changing, as I'm convinced there's no way it can change to develop from within support for real self-directed education. So I think that, you know, the dinosaurs died out because they simply could not adapt to the new environment. And I think that our school system will die out and the bureaucracy will die from it because it will become seen by more and more people as irrelevant. So this is already beginning to happen. Every 4 years, the United States Department of Education conducts a poll, at least they have for the past couple of decades, to see where school children are going to school. And every time they do it, there are more school children, school-age children not going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Who are most of it is homeschooling. And I'm also convinced for other reasons that an increasing number of homeschoolers are doing what's called unschooling.
Right.
And so this is already beginning to happen. People are taking their kids out of the standard school system. It used to be that homeschooling was largely for religious reasons and to give your children a religious curriculum, but that still occurs, but a growing number are doing it because they see that the school system is harmful to their children, and so they're simply taking them out. And then once they've taken them out and start homeschooling, they realize, why should I be making my child read these books that are on the curriculum when my child wants to read those other books that appear to be equally educative to the child, or my child wants to do this instead of that? Why? I can't see any reason for making my child do this or that. And so it evolves into ultimately unschooling in many cases. So this is already happening, but it can't work for everybody this way because you need a certain kind of a family. And to be able to connect the kids to the larger world, it's not adequate just to grow up with learning what your own family knows. So I think more and more people doing homeschooling and unschooling are recognizing the importance of having some kind of learning center, whether it's a parent-produced co-op or whatever it is, where you can bring the kids and they can get away from their parents, the parents can get away from them for periods of time, and the kids can be meeting other kids and other adults, and where there's a lot of things to do that might not be available at home. So the development of these centers, I think, is going to be the route, that as these begin to develop, and then at some point, I think, as more and more people are doing this, there will be people who are saying in their town to their town government and saying to nationally, well, wait a minute, you know, we're spending all this money on these schools, and now there are fewer people going to these schools. let's spend some of that money to develop learning centers for self-directed education. And there already is a precedent for learning centers for self-directed education, and that's libraries, right? I mean, sure. We have publicly supported libraries. You go to a library, and the librarian doesn't tell you what you have to read. The librarian helps you find what you want to read, right? And so I can picture libraries becoming extended and expanded in their range of function, and the sort of the librarian mentality instead of the teacher mentality becoming the mentality of the adults in that kind of a setting. So that's how I vision this occurring.
That, sure.
And so we would have public support. It wouldn't cost nearly as much as coercive schools. I mean, schools are expensive for the same reason that prisons are expensive.
When I was on my tour, I did talk to some families along the way, you know, parents who listened to the show but had children and teenagers who went to public school. And what I heard a couple of times is like, I get the problems that you're talking about, but that's where the resources are. And even now with a lot of these learning centers, I visited one in Columbus, Ohio called the Columbus Learning Cooperative, brand new place. Mm-hmm. The Circle School in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania was another, Sparks Academy in Wichita, Kansas. And, you know, even though right now most of the funding is tuition based or from other private sources, at least these places are, you know, a physical location. It's something tangible, which is a need that a lot of people have. And from that location, they're sending out a signal saying, look, you know, we're doing things a little bit differently around here, and people in the community can see that. And they now have a way of attracting some of the resources that the public system attracts. I mean, no one can argue that, you know, public school, whether we're talking about, you know, K through 12 or higher education, has all of the resources in the world. It's just a matter of how they're used. There's lots of people using those resources in not always the most self-directed way, but in these other institutions, that's really not the case. Almost everybody is there using them in self-directed ways. So it's really encouraging that that could expand and probably will expand.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting at the Sudbury Valley School and other Sudbury model schools, the recess sources are only purchased when there's a demand from the students for them.
Right,
so they're going to be used. They don't buy a bunch of stuff and the thought, oh, this is educationally valuable stuff. And then it sits there because nobody uses it. So they get stuff that there's a demand, clearly a demand for. And whereas the school system takes the opposite approach, they buy all this stuff, but then they don't actually even give you a chance to do anything with it, certainly not in any creative and self-directed way with it. So it's kind of, in some sense, there's money spent on resources, but it's kind of a waste.
Absolutely.
So, but what I'm seeing is more and more really actually well-equipped learning centers, and compared to public schools, it's not very expensive to do. So, for example, I visited place called Workspace something in Bristol, which is a learning center for homeschoolers. And you know, they've got 3D printers. They've got all kinds of great equipment there. It's just a wonderful resource that kids are coming in and using and being able to do creative things with.
Absolutely.
So that's phase one. It replaces what we're thinking of as elementary and secondary school. Mm-hmm. It's sort of this self-directed education to figure out who you are, what you want to do, what's out there in the world. Phase two is I called exploring a career path.
Yeah.
So the thing about growing up today in school and in college is you don't really learn either in public school or in college what kinds of jobs are out there, what it is, what the real world workplace is really like. You know, you go to college certainly if you're going on in an arts and sciences program, which most people do even today, the professors are interested in scholarship. Very few people are oriented towards wanting to become professional scholars, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so. And we couldn't afford to hire many of them either. So it's kind of silly that they're spending all that time as if they're apprenticeships to be professors, right? But a certain number of people would want to do that and should be doing that. But let's say you want to be a doctor, or let's say you think you might want to be a doctor, or you think you might want to be a lawyer, or you think you might want to be a plumber, or whatever it is you're thinking you might want to be out there in the real world. So in my idea, the next phase is exploring that career path. So somehow growing up, you're thinking, well, you know, let's take doctor just as an example, but it could be anything. Let's say I'm thinking I want to be a doctor. You know, I just kind of like the idea of healing people and so on and so forth. So today, if you ended high school thinking you want to be a doctor, so the first thing you would do is you would spend a lot of money to go to a most prestigious college you could possibly get into, where you would learn nothing about being a doctor, right? Mm-hmm. You'd learn some organic chemistry, you'd learn some of this and that, some courses, had nothing to do with actually being a doctor, with dealing with sick people, with the patients that's required, with dealing with blood, with, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
With dealing with people who are complaining to you and mad at you because you're not curing them or because you're not giving them the painkillers they want, or, you know, all the things of being a real doctor. You're just not experiencing.
Well, one of the things that used to scare me when I would do SAT tutoring, you know, yeah. And I'd have a group of 10 kids, you know, I was obviously very clear with them. Look, the only reason to be here is if you're planning to go to college. So I'd love to just go around the room and hear what each of you is interested in doing. And, you know, their answers were definitely vague and incomplete. It was like college was where they would figure that out. And the problem is that a lot of the field experience that you're talking about isn't even available until like tens of thousands of dollars have been invested in that career path.
Well, that's the point I'm making. Yeah. So you go through college. All right. So then you go to medical school. Then in medical school, you begin to have some exposure, finally in medical school, but you've already invested an enormous amount in this path. And also, you're not really doing much of real medicine, of real doctoring, until you're pretty far along, until you're kind of an intern. Well, by this point, you know, by this point, it's pretty hard to bow out of that. You've invested a huge amount of your life, a huge income in that. And now you're going to become a doctor, and you may well become a very unhappy doctor, right? Mm-hmm. With it. So what's a more rational solution? And the more rational way that we should be doing this, in my opinion, you think you want to be a doctor, you're 17, 18 years old. So the first step is not to go and do a liberal arts education. The first step is to go and work in a hospital setting or some kind of setting where you're actually there seeing what it's like to be a doctor, being around sick people, being around doctors, being some kind of a medical assistant. Whether you're just an orderly in the hospital, or whether you're an assistant to a doctor or assistant to a nurse, but something where you're actually paid something, you're actually contributing something. So instead of paying, you're actually being paid something, but you are learning firsthand what it is like. You're getting a sense, do I like being around sick people? Can I stand the smell of a hospital? Did I, you know, I can see what it's like. I can see the kind of patience that's required to deal with people who are ill and who are troubled. And so you're getting a sense of, do I really want to be a doctor? And so you might at that same time, maybe you're taking a couple of community college courses that have to do with a sort of, you know, you're taking a couple courses that have to do with that in direction. So at some point, suppose you do this and you decide, okay, I really do like this. This is tough. I can see this is tough, but I'm pretty good at it, and I can see spending my life doing this. So then you would go on to phase three. You would say, all right, now I am ready to become credentialed to be a real doctor. So now...
Could I ask you a question about phase two first? Okay.
Right.
So you said one of the encouraging things that you've seen is that there's been throughout this decade, there's been a pretty sizable increase in the number of apprenticeships programs that are available.
Right. That's right. So not for medicine, but for other realms, we're beginning to see that. So there are more people who are recognizing. So, for example, in the high tech industry, there are more people there who are recognizing that a college education doesn't do much to help you become good at your jobs.
Right.
More important is finding people who just really want to do this and are good at learning on the job, good at learning the new things. And so they've found that they're better off bringing in young people who are motivated to do this, who've already shown that they can learn this kind of stuff, but into an apprenticeship-like position. So they're working, they're maybe making some money, and they maybe are taking some courses in relationship to it, but they're actually engaged right there in the kind of job that ultimately they're seeking to get, maybe at a lower level within that kind of job. So that's already happening. I was talking with somebody who's the head of a fairly large company, who said, you know, we hire both college graduates and we hire people right out of high school, often for the same kind of jobs. And our observation has been that the people just out of high school are just as good
absolutely.
as the ones out of college. And so we're beginning to lean more and more towards hiring people just out of high school. So they're hiring them into positions, knowing that there may be a kind of learning phase here, but that learning phase is going to occur whether you've already had college or haven't had college. So might as well acknowledge it. This is a kind of a job in which you may start off not fully skilled at it, but it's worth the bet that you're going to become skilled over time at it. And so it's whether you call it employment or whether you call it an apprenticeship. So there's apparently a kind of revival of apprenticeships. More and more people are recognizing this. So what I'm suggesting is, I think this would work for every career, every kind of career, not just the kinds of careers that don't currently absolutely require a college degree, but for those kinds of careers that right now more or less require a college degree. I think it's possible to go to medical school without college, but I think it would be the rare person and the rare medical school that would allow this to happen. So
you're familiar with John Taylor Gatto, right?
Yes.
Another well-known education critic, Columbia guy too, by the way.
A lot of
critics of the current system, both secondary and higher education, seem to come out of Columbia, which is interesting.
Maybe reaction against Columbia.
That's what I'm thinking. Gatto, when he won Teacher of the Year in New York for New York State in the early 90s, he was sneaking kids out of school he'd be arrested for doing this today, but to, match them up with, people that he had vetted to do real world things that could eventually build on the intrinsic motivation they already had, but also set them up for a career. Because, he's working in the inner city. He knew these kids had all kinds of, financial concerns, and they wanted to be set up to work as soon as they were done with school. So they wanted to see school as something that had a purpose for them. And Gatto helped create that purpose. But it seems like he was just, in a way, modeling what so many of these alternative schools like Sudbury or the free schools that I visited, or there's a new one in Dover, New Hampshire called Big Fish. They prioritize community immersion and the opportunities that come from that. And the linking between, the first thing that you mentioned, the discovery phase, which is really about unschooling, and the second phase, the exploring the career path. I remember listening to John Holt talk about late 70s and the early 80s, and he was justifying unschooling. And, when he encountered critics, he'd say, look, we're just admitting kids into the world. We're just letting them into the adult world. And, that's what these first two steps are really about, getting some comfort with it in the discovery phase and then actually being able to take action with it in the career path phase.
Right. That's well said. The other thing I might comment on, the other change that has occurred over time since I was a kid, is it used to be that kids could get part-time jobs, and most kids did of one sort or another.
Right.
And in that sense, they were not necessarily exploring their ultimate career, but they were getting a sense of what it's like to be employed, to be out there doing a job, whether it was a paper route or whether it was something else. I was looking, I happened to get my Social Security statement the other day, and I was looking at it. I actually began contributing to Social Security when I was 12. I had a job working at a bookbindery in Duluth, Minnesota, when I was 12, after school, I was making deliveries, and I was doing janitor work at this place, and you could not get that job. Nobody under, I don't even know if a 16-year-old could get that job today.
Right.
But we've changed the world so that kids are just not allowed to get out there. My son at 13 was working in a restaurant, and so this would have been, he's probably kind of a contemporary with you. He was working in a restaurant and even started off just dishwashing, but then he was working, he was so good at, he was so conscientious and reliable that they had him frying food, cooking at this family restaurant. So, and you could, the law says you can't do that now. You can't do that if you're under, I don't know if it's 16 or 18, but certainly couldn't have done it at 13. So that's another thing we've done over time. We not only are we depriving children of play, but we're depriving them of the opportunity to have a part-time job and experience the, you know, both the responsibilities and the freedom that comes from work and having your own money that you can then, that your parents don't have control over, right? Mm. So, you know, that's a kind of freedom too, that money that you earn by yourself and you feel proud of having done that. So at any rate, that's a little bit of a digression, but it's partly because of the fact of these changes that it's all the more important today to have some kind of an apprenticeship system where you can actually learn about real world work. So that's the, the thing about this apprenticeship system, so you go, if you think you want to be a doctor and you go and you spend a little time in the hospital, you realize, oh my God, this is not what I want to do. So you haven't invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in it. You haven't invested a huge amount of your time in it. You now go try something else. You know, maybe I'd like to be a chef. Maybe I'd like to, you know, you go work in a kitchen, you know, as a, maybe at first just washing dishes. Do I like this kind of an environment? And you decide if you do, and you go on if you do. So that opportunity to explore career paths would be sort of phase two.
And if you've got a good guide, you know, I mean, and if you've got somebody asking you to be conscious of likes and dislikes in a certain work environment, you learn way more than I don't want to be a doctor or a nurse. You learn all kinds of attributes of an employment setting or a kind of vocation that you are no longer interested in, and that helps steer you in a new constructive direction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. So then once you find through this phase two, through the exploring your career path, what you really think you want to do, then you go on and do it. But for certain kinds of work, you might need phase three, which I've listed here, which is becoming credentialed for the work. So if you're going to become a novelist, there's no reason to become credentialed. There's a lot of kinds of things, there's no reason to become credentialed. But if you're going to be a doctor or a plumber or a lawyer, if you're going to do work for people where people's lives may depend upon the fact that you did it right.
I
think that we in the general public want some kind of proof that you know your job. And so I think there's a real need that for people who are doing work that people's lives depend on, that they be credentialed, that they go through some kind of training and testing so that they have proven to a group of experts that they know the latest information about this. They know what the code is if it's electrical work. They know what standard best practice is if it's medical work and so on. They know the latest and best techniques for surgery so that they know how to do minimally invasive as opposed to maximally invasive surgery if they're doing surgery and so on and so forth. We want people who do that, and therefore we need the credentialing mechanisms, and so that would be phase three. Once you've decided you want to become a doctor, then you do go to a medical school where you become highly. You've already learned a lot. You've already learned a lot of the basics in your apprenticeship phase, but now now it's the icing on the cake. You learn the latest techniques. You study with some of the most skilled people. And you get tested before you can become certified as a as somebody who actually practices medicine.
Right. And if phase two is available to people, you actually in the future would be able to build a better credential, as you know, some people have said, than the current college degree, right? You could build something that was more streamlined, that was more efficient. If you were giving people that phase two opportunity, you wouldn't have to, these young people wouldn't have to take on these enormous costs or these enormous debts. And there would be, you know, a faster path to actually being qualified on paper to do that career and to start doing it.
Right, exactly.
Are you familiar with Praxis, by the way?
That's a familiar term to me, but
This would be something I just wanted to mention it to you because it relates to both of the second and third phase. Their website is discoverpraxis.com. And basically what it is it's a year program. And I think that actually that phrase, building a better credential, I got that from one of their guys, building a better credential for a college degree. So what Praxis is it's a 6-month professional boot camp where each month has, you know, a theme like finding professional opportunities, learning with projects, being an on-command creator, like the skills that are actually needed for the work world of today. And then there's a 6-month apprenticeship at an actual company. So Praxis, I think, has only existed for a few years. They've got like a, I think it's $50,000 a year average starting income, $0 net tuition because you're getting paid to do the internship. As you pay for the program, and you're going to make more doing the internship. But I've interviewed a couple of their guys, and I thought it was a really impressive and concrete kind of solution to the college problem. And because I've seen that you've written about this a couple of times, I was hoping, too, that I might be able to match you guys up if you hadn't heard about them.
Yeah,
that sounds interesting. Because it seems to be, you know, an example of what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah, there are a number of some places that have gap year programs. There's one not far from where we live, and I actually know a young man who graduated high school not having any idea what he wanted to do, barely graduated high school, certainly that wasn't going to make sense for him to go on to college. So he went into this gap year program, which is a year in this case of doing a number. You do a series of apprenticeships, and you kind of have a choice. And he found that he loved cooking. He loved working in the kitchen, and he got rave reviews from the people he was working with. And then he went on to culinary school. And this was a young person who really had difficulty reading even when he graduated. Reading had no meaning to him. But now reading had meaning to him because he was in culinary school. There's a certain amount of reading you have to do, right? And a certain amount of writing you had to do. But it was now suddenly meaning to him, and he did really well. He never would have gotten into culinary school on the basis of his grades in high school. They never would have accepted him. But he got in because of the rave reviews he got from this apprenticeship program.
Right.
So this is, we don't really have, high school does not really give employers a good basis for evaluating whether they would be good or not good in the kind of career that they're looking for, you know. So an apprenticeship program is a very different thing. You go in, you try it out, and you see first, you know, people who are doing this can see firsthand, is this something that this person has a knack for and has some love for and is likely to go on and do very well in. So, yeah.
Well, that's an awesome vision, and it really aligned with a lot of the things that we've been talking about on my show for a while as far as alternatives and solutions. You know, just reading your work over the years, I knew there was so much we could talk about, and I was hoping we could fit a bunch of it into expanding that article. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show for this marathon conversation, more than twice as long as I expected to have you, and I'm super grateful for that. I hope as you continue to develop the Freedom to Learn blog, I can get you on again to talk about some more of these topics.
Great. I've enjoyed talking with you. I would have ended it sooner had I not.
Well, thank you so much again, and I look forward to talking to you in the future.
All right. Bye-bye. Have a good night. Let's find another place that's free.